2015 in Melbourne, Australia, and we're going to be looking at how to get liberated through sound, or deep and amazing chanting of the Hare Krishna mantra, and other mantras too. So I should first of all say that this is not my seminar, this is Bhakti Vigyan Maharaj's seminar. With his permission, I am borrowing it. His seminar goes over 5 days, about 2.5 hours each day. Now, this is a shortened version of a piece of it. If you want to hear all of Maharaj's seminar, if you do an internet search for liberation through sound by Bhakti Vigyan Swami, you may find it. So we're going to start. Maybe you could pass out those papers to everybody. That would be nice. Your little handy reference guide. Okay, so we're going to be starting with some verses on the Bhagavatam. We're going to start with text 3:26-32. Which Srila Prabhupada translates as, when egoism and ignorance is agitated by the sex energy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the subtle element sound is manifested, and from sound come the ethereal sky and the sense of hearing. And we're just going to read bits of the purport. Prabhupada says, I want you to listen carefully because I'm going to ask you questions about this. Especially anybody who's distracted by making garlands, I will especially ask them. Actually, whenever Prabhupada saw anybody doing anything else in class other than listening, he would give them a hard time and tell them to stop. So I will especially ask you in the corner. Yes. The verse I'm reading from is 3:26-32. Okay, what your paper there is just a handy guide because this is a little complicated and technical. And I found that if people don't have a little guide, it's hard for them to follow. But you don't have all the notes that I have. If you want all the notes that I have, you can request that electronically. Is that all right? So don't look on your paper for everything I'm reading, because you don't have everything I have. I have an extra, like, 6 sheets of paper here. Okay. If you want that, you can just ask Kasturika Devi Dasi or even myself, and I will immediately send it to you electronically. But what I found is that if you give people like 6, 7, 8 sheets of paper, they just leave them in the temple room and go home without them. So I know. This is just a little quick guide summary as to what we'll be talking about. So we're starting again with Bhagavatam 3:26-32. And the verse again, when egoism and ignorance is agitated by the sex energy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the subtle element sound is manifested, and from sound come the ethereal sky and the sense of hearing. So I'm just going to read a little bit from the purport. I'm going to ask you to please give your full and rapt attention. Prabhupada said, it is stated also, thank you, in the Vedanta Sutra, that sound is the origin of all objects of material possession, and that by sound one can also dissolve this material existence. Anavritti Shabdat means liberation by sound. The entire material manifestation began from sound, and sound can also end material entanglement if it has a particular potency. The particular sound capable of doing this is the transcendental vibration, Hare Krishna. Our entanglement in material affairs has begun from material sound. Now we must purify that sound in spiritual understanding. Somebody tell me, what did Srila Prabhupada just say? Yes?
We get entangled by sound and we can also get liberated.
Okay, excellent. We get entangled by sound and we can get liberated by sound. That's we. That means you and I and all of us. Prabhupada said, our entanglement in material affairs. So it's talking about us, the living entities. What else did Srila Prabhupada say? Excellent. That's first class. What else did Srila Prabhupada say?
All of creation comes from sound, and hence from sound can we liberate ourselves from creation.
Okay. You got the second half of what Radhasanga Devi Dasi said, and you got the first half of Prabhupada's other point. So let's get the second half of Prabhupada's other point. The whole material creation comes from sound, and
sound can liberate us.
Okay, that's the there's two main points here. So one point has already been said. Our personal entanglement is through sound, and sound can liberate us. That's the first point. Second point. The whole material creation comes from sound, and the whole material creation can be dissolved by sound. So we have two kinds of creation here. One is ours, our little individual manifestation in this material atmosphere and its dissolution, and the other is the great big material creation and its dissolution. Everybody follow that? Yes? Okay. So then Srila Prabhupada, at the end of the purport, starts to talk about the big creation, where he says, from sound the ether becomes manifested, the air became manifest from ether, and he says we'll explain this later on. Okay, now we're going to move to the 11th canto, 11, 12, 17. Now, here Krishna has been talking to Uddhava about all different ways of attaining perfection and enlightenment, all the different paths that one can take to becoming a perfected being, an enlightened being. And Uddhava is very confused, and he says, okay, you've talked about all these paths. What should I do? Right? Do you ever feel like that? What should I do? What should I do? What am I supposed to do? So Krishna answers him, and he says, my dear Uddhava, okay, listen, phones are just fine, but the music has to match the meaning of what we're talking about at the time. It's got to be like perfectly coordinated background music, and then you can have as many. Wouldn't that be nice? Wouldn't that be really nice if we had a class where just at the exact dramatic moment, the right phone turned on with the right music? That would be great. If you can't do that, please put your phone on vibrate, and if you don't know how to do that, just tap the person next to you on the shoulder and ask them, and they'll show you. Okay, so when Uddhava is really confused and he doesn't know what to do, what path should I take? So Krishna says, my dear Uddhava, the Supreme Lord gives life to every living being and is situated in the heart along with the life air and primal sound vibration. The Supreme Lord also assumes a gross form as the various sounds of the Vedas, composed of short and long vowels and consonants of different intonations. Okay, now would you know what to do? And Krishna goes on in the next verse, saying, when sticks of kindling wood are vigorously rubbed together, heat is produced by contact with air, and a spark of fire appears. Once the fire is kindled, ghee is added, and the fire blazes. Similarly, I become manifest in the sound vibration of the Vedas. So this is Krishna's answer as to what is the ultimate path to enlightenment. Now, in the purport of text 17, chapter 12, canto 11, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur discusses how Krishna's speaking about how he's situated in the heart along with the primal sound vibration refers also to Lord Brahma, and that the Lord enters through the chakras of Lord Brahma and comes up, starting with the Mula Chakra of Lord Brahma, up through Brahma's chakra and out of his mouth. And when the Lord comes out of his mouth as the sounds of the Vedas, then everything is produced. All right. So let's look first at the big creation, and then we're going to look at our little creation, and then we're going to look at how to use this scientific knowledge of sound to become liberated from material illusion, become enlightened, and become a pure devotee of Krishna. What do you think? Is that all right? Okay. All right, very good. This morning we were talking about, you know, why are we suffering? Is it that God isn't there, or that he's cruel, or... And we were talking about how the jiva is responsible, but we didn't really have time this morning to get into, well, what does the jiva do? What does the living being do to get out of this illusion? So that's what we're going to look at now. All right, first on the big creation. So for the big material creation, it starts with sound. And this is, of course, even explained in the Bible. In the beginning was the word. All right, so first there was sound. So what is that sound? Actually, it's interesting. The Bhagavatam talks about that there's a sound even that's a precursor to Om. Interestingly enough. Just a little note about this Omkara, or the pranava Om. So I'm sure many of you are familiar with Sanskrit. How many of you know something of Sanskrit grammar? Oh, very good. So you know that in Sanskrit grammar, you cannot put two vowels together. Yes? They join and become a new sound. In English also, you can't put two vowels together. Generally, we have a few exceptions like vacuum, skiing, create, and then some names, India, Hawaii. But generally in English, when you put two vowels together, they make a new sound. So if you want to talk about the cream, C-R-E-A-M, you don't say cre-m, right? You say E and the A join and they make a new sound. Now, but in English, it's not biologically logical. So a short E makes the sound eh, and a short A makes the sound ah. But you don't get eh and ah. You don't say eh, ah, eh, 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 and it becomes cram. The sounds don't blend, huh? But in Sanskrit, they do. So you have in this sound, an om, it's actually a, and u, a, u, and then the anushwar, m. So a and u, the a is the sound you make without using your tongue or your lips or your teeth. Just a, try it, a, a, a. It's the beginning sound. It's the essence of all sounds. And if you add a to u, try it, a, u, a, u, a, u, a, u. You start saying o. So in Sanskrit, a and u making o is because a and u do make o, unlike the e and ah, which do not make E in English. All right? And so Krishna says that he's the A. In the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, I am the letter A. When we read that in English, we may think Krishna is saying, I'm the letter A, but that's not what he's saying. The letter A is a completely different letter in Sanskrit. So we represent it with the Roman letter A for the sound A. It's really much more like a U. I don't know why somebody did that. But in any case, probably from Italian rather than English. So if you look at the Krishna says, I'm the A. That's the very beginning sound, the essence of all sounds. So Krishna says he is the A. And Jiva Goswami explains that the U is the Krishna's Shakti, Lakshmi, Radharani, Rukmini, etc., Sita, Devi. And the Anushwara, the M, that's us, the Jivas. So you have Shaktiman as the A, you have Shakti as the U, then you have the Jivas as the M. So this Om is the complete representation of reality. The Lord, His energies, and the living entities. Could everybody here move up like this much? I am not armed. Okay, thanks. I don't know why it is that in almost wherever you go in the world, people always try to fill up a room from the back. It's quite interesting. Everybody comes right into the back. But now, by the way, if we look at the Hare Krishna mantra, which is very easy because you can look at the Hare Krishna mantra right there. So we'll see that we also have Shakti and Shaktiman there, yes? Where is Krishna? That's pretty easy. He's right there. Krishna and Rama, that's both Shaktiman, the possessor of Shakti. And where do we have Shakti? Hare. Okay, well, where is the Jiva in the Hare Krishna mantra? Where are we? Anybody know? So the Hare Krishna mantra is in the vocative sense. It's when you're talking to somebody. Yeah? This is not, if you want to say Krishna went to the bank of the Jamuna, you would not use Krishna. You'd use Krishna. If you want to say this ball belongs to Krishna, Krishnastya. I gave the ball to Krishna, Krishnam. But you wouldn't use Krishna as like the subject of a sentence. Now, in English, we don't do that. You know, if your name is Mary, Mary went to the store, and hello, Mary is the same. But like my name is Urmila, and if you were to speak to me in Sanskrit, you wouldn't say, oh, hi, Urmila. You'd say what? Oh, hi, Urmile. Change the name. Change the form. So these forms, Krishna, Rama, and Hare, mean that somebody's talking. It's something like in English when we have quotation marks, you know somebody's talking. So when you have nouns in the vocative, somebody must be talking. And this is an unusual form, grammatical form for a mantra. Most mantras are like, Om Namo Krishnaya. I offer my obeisances to Krishna. As if you're talking to somebody else. Oh, I'm offering my obeisances to Krishna. But here you're talking to Krishna directly. So you're talking, so that's where we are in the mantra. Everybody follow that? We have to be in the mantra because someone has to be speaking the mantra. So therefore, Srila Prabhupada says that Om is contained in the Hare Krishna mantra. Does everybody understand that? Okay, got that? All right, good. So the original sound is this Omkara. And this produces what? Anybody know what sound produces in the beginning of creation? Ether, space. So space, that's the element we're least aware of. Generally, we understand space just by the defining boundaries around the space. Although really space defines everything. So sound produces space. And then from space comes what sense? Anybody know? The air, but first the sense of touch. First the sense of touch. Yeah, hearing is how you understand that there's space. So sound creates space, which you understand by hearing. From space comes touch, which creates, who said, somebody said? Air, which doesn't just mean the particular combination of gases that we breathe. It means any matter in a gaseous form. So that comes gaseous matter, and from that comes form, yes. And form produces fire, which doesn't just mean, again, what you turn on with the gas in your stove to cook something, but any radiant energy. So that it would include the light in this room, the warmth. Everybody feel the warmth in this room? So that is also fire. Okay, and then from fire comes water, it comes taste. And then from taste comes water, which again does not just mean this water, H2O, but it means any liquid form of matter. She's just totally fine. Yeah, just she's fine. It's okay. It's okay. She's fine. So all liquid matter, and from that comes smell, and from which comes earth, which doesn't just mean the big planet or the dirt. It means any matter that's in a solid form. So all of that's coming originally from sound, right? Now, even modern science will agree with this, by the way. because this so-called solid object is mostly space and is made up of atoms and molecules, the parts of which are moving. In the atom is mostly space and everything. And if there's moving, that means there's vibration. If there's vibration, there's sound. So I'm sure you all know in Krishna book, in the Rasalila chapter, Srila Prabhupada says that the whole world is full of Krishna's. You don't know. You should know this. Singing. Prabhupada says the whole world is full of Krishna's singing. So by Krishna singing this original vibration, everything is manifested. And that means that everything is a manifestation of sound. Everything is a manifestation of sound. I mean, it's easy to understand that everything's a manifestation of sunlight. That's pretty easy. Is everything we eat a manifestation of sunlight? Yes, sunlight, water, and a little earth minerals, correct? Everything, can you eat anything that's not sunlight, water, and earth minerals? Right. Everything is either that or eating that and eating that and eating that, yes? Okay? So like if you look at your fingernails, we can look at your fingernails for a minute. So yesterday, everybody has fingernails? Can you look at them? That's good. Okay, so yesterday that fingernail was a chapati. Okay, and a few days before that, the fingernails were sunlight. Is that cool? That Krishna turned the sunlight into a japati, into fingernails. Everybody understands that? Does that, yes? We all agree? We all took our science classes in school? So that's pretty amazing. Okay, there's light in this room. And that light turns into fingernails. It turns into wood that you make this thing out of. This is a transformation of light. So it's not too difficult to understand that everything is a transformation of sound. Light is an intermediate step, actually. Light and water, intermediate step. Ultimately, everything's a transformation of sound. Okay, now as we said, it's explained that for, yes?
By sound, are you referring to energy waves? Sound, as we hear it now, it needs air to vibrate.
That's a very interesting point, because we think of sound, that sound requires something that's a that couldn't exist in a precursor to air. However, just to throw this out there, are the scientists sending out some sort of sounds into outer space where, as far as they're concerned, there's no air? They sent something vibrating there. Yes? Where they say that there's no air, correct? We'll just leave it at that. So it's not, you know, one thing to really keep in mind with modern science, and I don't want to get too far afield with this because we have places to go and things to do and people to meet, but one thing to keep in mind about modern science is they know very, very little about very, very little. So even though they can do wonderful, incredible things, like you can have a video chat with somebody across the world in real time on this little tiny machine you can carry in your pocket. And so they're very impressive. They still know just a little bit about a little bit. So that's just something to keep in mind. And all this, every scientist will admit that. Yes? Every scientist will admit that. At least at the higher levels. What I found is that when you're getting your bachelor's degree, they tell you that science and the empiric method is infallible. When you're getting your master's degree, they tell you that science and the empiric method is infallible. And when you start to take a PhD, they start telling you that science and the empiric method are completely fallible and they don't know what they're doing. It's quite an experience to go to your class, you know, your PhD level class on the philosophy of research. And the first thing they tell you is the empirical method is flawed. Here are all the flaws with the empirical method. This is why we don't know anything. These are all the philosophies about what we know and what we don't know, and actually we have no idea what's going on. And you're sitting in the back of the class thinking, oh, this is what Prabhupada talked about when he said don't engage in mental speculation. And so you pull out your songbook and start memorizing Narottama Das Thakur's songs instead. Yes, may I help you?
Ether. Where is the ether? Where is the ether?
What do we mean by ether? Space. Space. You can think of space as what defines everything. So space is where the liquids, gases, radiant energy, and solid matter all have their place. It's what gives meaning to everything. We understand meaning by geographical location. You understand the meaning of what I'm saying because there's spaces between the words and between the sentences. My daughter-in-law once had her little daughter take all the keys off of her computer keyboard, and when my son put them back on, the space bar didn't work. And getting messages from her without a space bar, they were unintelligible. So it's space that adds meaning to music, that adds meaning to speech, that gives meaning to everything. Space is the original defining element. Without space, nothing else can exist. And I do have another seminar on the five elements, but it's not this one, so I don't want to get too far afield here, if that's okay. Is that all right? Okay, thanks. All right, so that's the big creation. Now we're going to go to the secondary creation. We're still talking big creation, but that was like the big, big creation of Mahavishnu. Right? Yeah, Karan Arnava Jale Bhajatisma Yoga Nidra Mananta Jagadanda Saroma Kupad Hara Shakti Mavalambya Paramaswamurti. And now we're going to go to the next one of Lord Brahma. So that's what's explained in the 11th canto in the purport by Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, where he refers to other places in the Vedas, which are referenced on the bottom of your paper, about four kinds of speech, four kinds of sound. And here it's explained that the Lord enters into the Muladhara, the Mula Chakra. So the Mula Chakra is all the way at the base of your spine. Any of you who know anything about Astanga Yoga and Sat Chakra Yoga. So the Muladhara is the very bottom chakra. And the Lord enters into this bottom chakra of Lord Brahma as what's called Paravak. So para means transcendental, other, beyond, basically spiritual sound. And this sound then moves up through the chakras of Lord Brahma, goes to the Manipur chakra of Lord Brahma, which is around the navel, and there it's as Pasyanti Vak. Then it comes up into the throat, the mouth, the palate, which is the chakra here, into the Vasuddha chakra, and there it exists as Majjhima Vak. And then it comes out of Lord Brahma's mouth as what's called Vaikari Vak. Now, due to a whole long story, which I don't have time to tell, there was a curse, I think by Indra, so that we only hear Vaikari Vak. We don't hear the other forms of speech, at least not of other people. We can hear of our own, but we can't hear of others. And when this Vaikari Vak comes out of the mouth of Lord Brahma, when he speaks, it manifests everything. So when he says the names of things, they manifest. The sound of things and the name of things at that point of creation is the same. And that's how the secondary creation takes place. So the big creation of earth, water, fire, air, ether comes from the singing of the Lord, which then pervades all matter. And the secondary creation from Lord Brahma comes from the Lord entering the chakras of Lord Brahma and coming up as Paravak, Pasyantivak, Majjhimavak, and Vaikarivak. So now we've looked at the first point that Srila Prabhupada made in that third canto purport, where he said that the whole material creation comes from sound. And we know at the end, everything starts folding into itself and comes back to sound. Yes?
How did they say that so-and-so portion came from the back of Brahma, came from different portions?
Well, it's interesting you bring that up. And again, I apologize that we don't have time to go there. Many years ago, Tamal Krishna Maharaj did an analysis of how the creation is described in the Bhagavatam. And he came up, I have these files back in America in a filing cabinet in hard copy. I don't have them electronically at all. They were done very long time ago. And he came up with several different versions of creation from the Bhagavatam. And he was not able, he worked with Sataputra Prabhu and other scientists, and he was not able to match the versions. He was not able to say, okay, this version of creation, this version of creation, this is how they all work together. And so they just stopped, and they didn't go any further. Not being a scientist myself, I'm not going to try to do something that Sataputra Prabhu couldn't do. My very simple understanding of things like that is that you're looking at the same thing through a different lens. It's something like if you're going to explain how does a child become an adult, and you could talk about physically, socially, intellectually, and you're looking at different things, and they don't all match. You can't say physical development at this level is going to match intellectual development at this level is going to. It doesn't all go together. And so if you're describing something, you through different lens, you'll describe it very differently. And that's the best that I can do, which probably isn't satisfactory. Yes?
Another question. When you say that the Lord enters the Muladhara chakra, what aspect are we talking about?
We're talking about the aspect that's described in Bhagavatam 11, 12, 17, where Krishna says, the Supreme Lord gives life to every living being and is situated within the heart along with the life air and primal sound vibration. The Lord can be perceived in his subtle form within the heart by one's mind, since the Lord controls the minds of everyone, even great demigods like Lord Shiva. The Supreme Lord also assumes a gross form as the various sounds of the Vedas, composed of short and long vowels and consonants of different inclinations. And this is explained then by the Acharyas, that what this means is that the Lord, in the form of sound, enters the Muladhara of Lord Brahma. And then as he comes up through the chakras of Lord Brahma, manifests, as Krishna directly tells Uddhava, as the gross sounds of the Vedas. So it starts as the subtle primal sound vibration in the Muladhara and comes out eventually through Lord Brahma's mouth, as Krishna is saying here, the short and long vowels and consonants of different intonations. So then Lord Brahma is making all these different sounds which manifest as the creation. Yes?
When we are producing spiritual sound like chanting Hare Krishna, so we have a gross sound coming, so it has to do with the vibration which happens in the other chakras as well.
It happens in the
other chakras as well?
Yes, and we'll hopefully by the time we finish, we will have answered that question. And if you still feel dissatisfied when we're finished, then ask again, and you may even ask it a little differently. Is that okay? Okay. All right, so we've talked about the whole big creation on the first level of creation and the second level of creation. Now, what was Srila Prabhupada's second point again in that first purport in the third canto?
Sound,
everything's dissolved. Okay, that's the first thing. We talked about everything comes from sound. But he made a second point. What was the second point? Our entanglement. Yes, thank you. All right, so our entanglement comes from sound, not just the big material creation. That means our individual entanglement comes from sound. So this is also going through these same processes of the four sounds. So this is the soul first making a sound. The paravak is a spiritual sound. It's the sound of the soul. And what sound does the soul make that starts its material entanglement?
Desire.
A desire to?
Enjoy.
Be the enjoyer, the controller. Actually, one devotee said to me recently, it's not so much wanting to enjoy because we were already enjoying, but wanting to be the controller. I want to be the Lord. Bhaktivinoda Thakura said it's a desire for fame. I want to be the most important. I want to be at the center. I want to be the controller. And the soul is very powerful. The soul has most of the qualities of God. We were just reading that this morning. And we come from a world where desires are fulfilled, where if the soul expresses a desire, it's fulfilled. So when the soul expresses this desire, I want to be the center, I want to be the most important. So how is that going to be fulfilled in the spiritual world? So there becomes then a covering of intelligence, because it's just a general thing. I want to be the controller, I want to be the most important, I want to be at the center. Well, how are you going to be the center? So this voice of Paravak moves up into the covering of the intelligence, which is controlling Ichha Shakti, the Shakti of desire. And at that point, it takes some form. So let's say you want to start a business. What do you need first? Or project, anything. What do you need to have first? An idea, yes, not money, because if you have money and you don't have an idea, it's worthless. Just by the way. If you had millions and millions and millions and millions of dollars and you had no idea what you wanted to spend it on, it would just be a burden to you. Just by the way. I know somebody that happened to, who got a whole lot of money and just felt it was a burden because they didn't know what to spend it on. They had no vision. What do I do with this money? So you have to have a vision. Right? We use that word, vision. And the voice moving up comes to be called pasyantivak. Vak means a speech. And what does pasyanti mean? To see. Just like every day we sing, pasyanti panti kalayanti chiram chagandi. Pasyanti means to see. So this is the voice of vision. This is the voice of desire. Not just I want to be the controller, I want to be the center, but it becomes more specific. You have some vision, what I want to achieve. All right, and then becomes a further covering of mind. And the mind is the accepting, rejecting. And if things go well, the mind accepts and rejects according to the vision. If things go poorly, the mind accepts and rejects according to the senses. That's like what an animal does, right? The dog smells something, smells good, accepts, smells bad, reject. Right? But the way the human being is supposed to work is, it smells good. Oh, does that fit my plan? And then I decide whether I accept and reject. So then it comes up to the next voice, the voice of the Majjhimavak. Majjhima literally means middle. But this is the voice of the mind. And we may not be very aware of our spiritual voice. We may not hear our spiritual voice at all, clamoring, I want to be at the center. I want to be famous. I want to be the most important. We may not hear that at all. We may not even be so aware of our vision and our desires. Generally, conditioned souls are not very aware of their own desires. And when you become aware of your own desires, it's often quite shocking. But we're very aware of this Majjhimavak. Majjhimavak is the little voice we hear all the time, speaking in English or Gujarati or Croatian or Spanish or whatever it may jibber-jabber in. Or maybe it switches back and forth between all of those. Oh, look at that over there. What about over there? I have to do this tomorrow. What about this yesterday? And this happened. Oh, did I check this on my email? Did I write this letter? Do I have to do that over there? What are they doing over there? Look at that interesting person over there. The Majjhimavak is something, it reminds me something of a young monkey. You know, have you ever seen a young monkey? You know, just. And the mind seems to be a distraction machine. It definitely seems to be like, don't think about God, anything else. Over there, over there, over there, over there, over there. Oh, worry about this, worry about that. What about that? What again? So that's the Majjhimavak. It pretty much is jabbering all the time. And the Majjhimavak is what's meant to facilitate our getting the vision of the Pasyantivak. It's meant to accept and reject things according to the direction of the Pasyantivak. All right, but that's not enough. If you just have an intelligence and a mind, you have to have a gross body. In this world, you don't have a gross body, you can't do anything. So then we get a gross body, and through the gross body, we can speak. Prabhupada would sometimes ask, you know, what is the start of any project? He said people started talking about it. Right? Let's build a kitchen for the Melbourne temple. We talk about it. Oh, yeah, okay, let's do that. So that's the Vaikaribhag, which you could say symbolizes all gross behaviors. But in this case, we're talking specifically about sound. So finally it comes out as the Vaikarivak. I want to do this, I want to do that, I want to go here, I want to go there. I'm worried about this, I desire this and that. But that is the sound of action. And there we are. We have now created our material entanglement. It is now complete. And with our Pasyantivak, our Majjhimavak, and our Vaikarivak, we become like a little Lord Brahma creating our own little world. Maybe it's a corner in a room in the Brahmacharya Ashram, and maybe it's a 5-story marble house with a Jaguar and a BMW in the garage, but it's our little world that we look around and go, yes, this is my world that I created it. All right, so there we are. Now, we're not so terribly interested in this class tonight as to how the material creation gets dissolved, although the elements do fold in on each other. The earth folds in into water, and the water folds in into fire, which folds into air, which folds into ether, which eventually folds into the Mahatattva. But we're very interested in reversing our entanglement, yes? Krishna's going to worry about reversing the whole creation. That's not our particular worry, not in this lifetime. Anyway, maybe if we're Lord Brahma, we get to worry about that a little bit, but not in this life. But we want to reverse our material creation. So Srila Prabhupada says very nicely, in his purport to 4.23.16 in the Bhagavatam, he says the words yatastanam bivagashaha indicate that one should know the process of creation and should meditate upon the creative process inversely, and thus become free from material contamination. So that's what we're all about to do. We're going to meditate on the creative process inversely. So I'm sure all of you have traveled with a GPS, right? Yes? Yes? Or maybe you even got reverse directions online. You know, went to got some directions, and then you could get reverse directions. So many people have their GPS already programmed to home. If you have a GPS you use all the time, you already have your home programmed in it. So you want to go somewhere. It takes you there, you know, turn right, turn left, turn right in 300 meters. And then when you get to your destination, and many of them are even voice activated, right? You can just say, okay, home. I remember my parents got one of the first GPSs, one of the really new ones when they were still like, you know, $2,000. And they called it Rosie. And so once they got to their destination, they were really proud of it too, you know, whatever, you'd ride in the car with them. They'd get to the destination and they'd say, Rosie, home. And she would calculate how to get home. And when you go back, everything is reversed, yes? The right turns become left turns. The left turns become right turns. You go back. So that's what we're going to do now. We're going to go home. Everybody want to go home? Are we tired? Did we make a mistake? I think so, yes. So now we're going to go home. So the way we're going to go home is we're going to reverse. And the way we're going to reverse is we're going to take the spiritual sound of the liberated soul. What is the spiritual sound of the liberated soul? The Hare Krishna mantra. Right? That is the sound that the liberated soul is vibrating. We're going to take that sound and we're going to first vibrate it on the level of Vaikari Vak. We're going to first vibrate it with the mouth. Remember, we're going in reverse, right? We started at Paravak, we went to Pasyanti Vak, we went to Majjhima Vak, we went to Vaikari Vak. So going backwards, we're going to start with Vaikari Vak. We're going to start chanting the Hare Krishna mantra with our mouth. And when we're chanting with our mouth, what's the Majjhima Vak going to be doing? Look at that over there. What about this? And I want to with yesterday and tomorrow and the other day and this person and that problem and this problem and this hope and this dream. And we're still we're just chanting with the mouth. And what's the Pasyanti Vak doing? I want this and that and this idea, and I could enjoy it this way and that way. And what's the Paravak going? I want to be the center. I want to enjoy. I want to be important in the material world. So that's what we're doing. And that kind of chanting is also called Nam Aparad. Right? Right? It's also called inattentive chanting. But that's how you have to start, because that's where you are. Right? When you're at your destination, you can't start three blocks away to go home. You have to start where you are. So generally, that's how we start. And we shouldn't be discouraged about that. That's how we start. All right, so then what do you want to do? You want to keep going. You don't want to stay just on the Vaikari Vak platform. And just to thoroughly discourage you, actually, it's interesting because I didn't have time. I just read this yesterday, and I didn't have time to add it to this seminar. But I was just reading yesterday. I mean, I've read it before, but somehow when I read it yesterday, just like, oh, that would fit with this seminar. It's where Mahaprabhu is speaking to Sanatana Goswami, and he talks about the different weeds that can grow with the creeper of bhakti. And it's a little different from this list of Jiva Goswami, but it shares some things in common. So if you want to look that up, it's in Madhya, oh, ouch, can't remember, 17, 18, or 19. One of them is Kuti Nata. I remember that. But I will dutifully add that to this seminar for the next time I teach it. Sorry, I don't have it for this time. But this is from Jiva Goswami, and he says, if you stay on the level of Vaikari Vak, now, pretty much we all start that way. Pretty much. The only reason you wouldn't start that way is if you already progressed past that in another lifetime, or if you were very involved in some other system of yoga that, so you started bhakti on a different platform, which, by the way, is not what we recommend. We don't recommend you first do another system of yoga and then do bhakti. It's more efficacious to just start with bhakti. But if you started another system of yoga, if you were doing karma yoga, jnana yoga, astanga yoga, and then you switched to bhakti, you may come into bhakti at a higher level. Or if you started bhakti in another life, you may come at a higher level. But generally, we all start at Vaikari Bhakti, and that's fine. But Jiva Goswami says, if you stay there intentionally, if it's time to move on and you intentionally stay there, these are the things that will happen. And they're scary and they're nasty and they're just depressing. So he said, you'll get crookedness. You'll become crooked. You'll become deceitful. Because if you just stay on Vaikari Vak, you're not really making much spiritual advancement at all. Very, 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 very little. You're really not getting much of anywhere. But if you keep doing that, you may become deceitful. Oh, I'm so spiritually advanced, when internally you're not. Faithlessness, you're not going to be getting much effect. And so you'll start to lose faith. You'll think, well, it doesn't really work. I'm chanting, and it doesn't really matter. There's one heavy quote, which I have in my other seminar in chanting, where Prabhupada said, if you're chanting mechanically and thinking about material things, it is useless. And then he has this long pause, and he says, or it will take a very long time. And he says, you're reading Krishna book. Why can't you think about how Krishna is killing the demons and the cowherd boys are cheering? Anyway, so one becomes faithless. One thinks, I'm chanting, and with all the effects that's mentioned in the Shastra, I'm just not getting them. One will start to get attached to things that destroy faith in Krishna. Well, why is that? Well, if I'm chanting, and I'm not experiencing anything, I'm not experiencing Cheto Darpanam Arjanam, Bhavama, Davagni Dirmapanam, those things are not happening to me, and I'm losing my faith, then I want things that justify that it's okay that I'm losing my faith. I don't want to confront the fact that I'm not going deeper. I want something to say, yeah, you shouldn't have any faith. There isn't anything there to have faith in. So I start becoming attached to things that justify my faithlessness. Then slackness in the process. Well, if I'm not getting anywhere, why should I be so strict about it? So people will either, they'll stop chanting, or they'll not even pretend to chant attentively. I mean, I've seen some pretty odd things that people do, even shamelessly, you know, publicly in their chanting. They're just slackness in the process. And the one that I think is the most heart-wrenching, is taking pride in devotional accomplishments. So one time I visited a temple I hadn't been to before, and this one brahmachari comes out. Hare Krishna. Hare Krishna Prabhu. I am so-and-so das. I am the temple commander. And he starts giving me his whole CV, his whole resume. And I'm just standing there at the gate like, okay, was I hiring for a job or why are you telling me? And he's telling me everything he's ever done, how many books he's distributed, what he did in the temple, how many pots he washed, and all these things. And then he looks at me and he says, and so what department are you in? And I'm like, I don't know, troublemaking. I don't quite know what to say. And I was really thinking about it. Why did this person who I've never met before, I've never seen since, why was he telling me all of his accomplishments? And when I read this from Jiva Goswami, I thought it's so easy to fall into this kind of trap. You know, because when you just stay on the level of Vaikari Vak, you're not really going much of anywhere. You just kind of started. When you start on Vaikari Vak, it's like you've gotten in the car and you've turned on the engine. So that's something. It's not nothing. But you're not going anywhere yet. And so if you're just there for a long time with the engine running and the scenery isn't changing, what are you going to do? If you don't completely give up the process, how are you going to convince yourself that you're making advancement? And how are you going to convince yourself that you become a very great devotee? Well, you start looking at what you've done externally. I've waved so many sticks of incense. I've chanted so many mantras. You know, I've donated so much money. I've cooked so many kofta balls. Whatever it is, you start looking at those sorts of things. And sometimes we even encourage that among each other. You know, that this becomes the main way that we talk about other people. Oh, they did this externally and that externally and this externally and that externally. So if you see yourself falling into these kind of things, deceiving others, losing faith, getting attached to things that make you think it's good that you're losing faith, now you're finally becoming, you know, really sober and intelligent and thoughtful, and becoming slack in the process, and judging your spiritual life only by the externals, these are all symptoms of intentionally staying on the Vaikari Vak platform when you are capable of moving on. To start there is fine. There's nothing wrong with starting there. It's accepted that we should start there. But we should go on from that. And Srila Prabhupada frequently says, we begin at the Kanista platform, but everybody should come to the Majjhima platform. Yes, you hear Prabhupada say this a lot. Everyone should come to the Majjhima platform. So that's what we're going to talk about now, to go on to Majjhima Vak. To go on to Majjhima Vak, to start chanting not only with the voice, but also with the mind. So sometimes this is referred to as hearing the mantra. So your mind and your voice are both chanting. This is also when Prabhupada has many, 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 many quotes, which I collect, about how when one chants Hare Krishna, one should be thinking about Krishna. And he'll often say things like, you're seeing the deity, you can look at the feet of the deity, then the knees and the thighs, the belly, the chest. He said, so what is the difficulty to remember the deity while you are chanting? One time in Switzerland, Prabhupada said, chanting Hare Krishna means you make it, he said, you imagine. He said, you imagine a diamond throne within your heart, and that you have seated Krishna there, that you are bathing him with Ganga and Jamuna water, you are dressing him, you are ornamenting him. And these things are not false, Prabhupada says. He says, Krishna is actually accepting them. And I know of several devotees that really took this very much to heart. And every time they would chant, they would imagine a diamond throne in their mind and Krishna there, and they would imagine going through the whole process as the deity, and imagine going through the whole process of deity worship with their chanting, and Krishna eventually manifests. So their mental imagination of the deity receiving their worship, that Krishna manifested in that meditation. So we'll get there. So this is chanting on the level of Majjhima Vak, that the mind is fully engaged in the chanting. There's one nice quote where Prabhupada says, when you're chanting, you should feel the presence of Krishna, and you should think of Krishna like Krishna's talks on the Bhagavad Gita to Arjuna, and if you can't do that, then just try to hear the mantra very distinctly and sincerely. So all those sorts of instructions, remember Krishna's instructions on the battlefield, imagine you're bathing and worshiping Krishna on a diamond throne, remember Krishna killing the demons, or just hear this. If you can't do any of that, Prabhupada would say, just hear the sound of the mantra, or meditate on the form of the deity, and if you can't do that, just hear. That's, he's all talking about Majjhima Vak, chanting on the level of Majjhima Vak. Now, when you start chanting on the level of Majjhima Vak, something very interesting happens. At a certain point, the Pasyanti Vak will join in. Pasyanti Vak is the voice of desire. This is the voice of attraction. And you can think of it with the Bhagavad Gita fall down sequence for material things. By contemplating, you become attached. From attached, you get lust. So by contemplating the name, you become attached, and some desire awakens. Some desire awakens. Now that is a very auspicious thing. When that desire awakens, then you're really starting to enter into the higher realms of spiritual life. Now, sometimes that desire sparks in a very general way. Oh, I really want to surrender to Krishna. I really want to give Krishna my heart. Not intellectually. Not, yes, I'm convinced that I should give Krishna. It says right here. But as a feeling, as a desire, there's some emotion involved, and it's genuine. It's really... I remember one time I was in a town in South Africa. There's a family that runs a small temple, and they basically do almost everything themselves. What's it called? Something about flowers on fire is the translation of the Afrikaans. Anyway, so they run this small temple, and they also have like a little restaurant in the temple. Bloemfontein, thank you. So the justice couple basically do almost everything with a little help here and there. And the wife is in the kitchen all day, and she's always smiling. And she's cooking these huge pots all day, every day, and she's always just all the time, you know? She's working really, really hard from early in the morning to late at night, every day, cooking and serving and cleaning out with just a little bit of help here and there. And after being there a few days, I just looked at her in the kitchen, and I had a feeling, oh, I want to serve her. I want to help. Right? You understand these kind of feelings? They're spontaneous feelings. It's not like, I'm supposed to serve her. She's working really hard. It's my duty. My mommy taught me that when I was five. It wasn't that kind of a thing. It was just something that just came from within, out on its own accord. I didn't plan it. I didn't think about it. It was just, can I help you? So it's those sorts of desires coming from the Pasyantivak in relation to chanting. Okay? That's not the ultimate, but that's what we want to go for, those desires. And then on a higher level, those desires come up very specifically. Oh, I want Krishna as my child. I want Krishna as my friend. I want Krishna as my beloved. Those sparks come up. And then what you want to do is you want to increase those sparks until they become a blazing fire. And you want to start chanting on the level of Pasyantivak, on the level of desire. So this is what we're talking about in the Shikshastika, Ainanda Tanuja Kinkara Patitamam Bashame Bhavam Bujo. That this is starting to be on the level of desire. Krishna, save me, take me home, engage me in your service. Not as just Krishna, engage me in your service, Krishna, engage me. But there's that you really want that. And that it starts to become more and more and more and more and more consuming. And as that starts happening, remember this is Pasyantivak, it's the voice of not only desire, but of vision. So when this starts happening, one starts getting what's called spiritual television. You've heard Prabhupada talk about this, spiritual television? That within the heart there's a television set? And you can turn in, it's got lots of channels. It's got the Krishna channel, the Ramchandra channel, the Kurma channel, the Varaha channel. And you can tune in. And it's a really cool movie because not only can you see it, and it's not only in 3D without glasses. You know, you can see it, you can hear it, you can also smell it. And you can also touch it, and you can also taste it. Okay, but it's still material. We haven't gone down to the spiritual. And then chanting on that level, and especially once one specific desire for Krishna service awakens. And gradually then, one comes to, the soul starts to really awaken. And one starts chanting on the level of Paravak. The soul proper starts to chant in its own voice. And at that time, one will come to the point of seeing Krishna face to face. And then one is no longer really within this material world, although externally it may seem that way. And then everything has been reversed. Then we have come. Then Rosie has taken us home. And we are back. And then everything. Then there's full integrity. The Paravak, the Pasyantivak, the Majjhimavak, and the Vaikarivak are all chanting together. They're all saying the same thing, right? So in the beginning we chant with the Vaikarivak, and the Majjhimavak is still going, what about this, what about that? Past, present, future, this person, that person, this plan, this dream. The Pasyantivak is going, that's my vision. And the Paravak is going, I want to be at the center. And then you start chanting also with the Majjhimavak. But even then, the Paravak still has this vision of enjoyment. The Pasyantivak still has the vision of enjoyment. And the Paravak is still saying, I want to be at the center. And then one starts chanting with the Pasyantivak. But still the Paravak is saying, I think I still want to be at the center. Probably. And eventually one's chanting also with the Paravak. And this is compared, as we already read, Krishna comparing this, in the 18th verse of chapter 12 of the 11th canto, where he said that when you want to create a fire, no, you don't have that, I'm sorry. I don't give you everything. If you want everything, you have to email me and you can get everything. And he says, when sticks of kindling wood are vigorously rubbed together, heat is produced by contact with air and a spark of fire appears. Once the fire is kindled, ghee is added and the fire blazes. Similarly, I become manifest in the sound vibration of the Vedas. That's what we want. We want that when we chant, we hear Krishna and his name are the same. But we want realization of that, yes? We want Krishna to manifest in the sound. Something like, you have the deity, somebody carves the deity out of stone, correct? And then you invite Krishna to manifest in the deity. So we are asking Krishna to manifest in the sound. Because originally everything is Krishna. So we're asking him to manifest in the sound. So he's saying that happens in the same way you start a fire. Now, it's a little hard for us because this is not how we start fires today. So if Krishna were talking to us today, he might give a different analogy. But as he's given this analogy, we're going to use it, even though it's not so much within our experience. But if you're first going to start fire by friction, so you're rubbing, and Krishna says that you get heat. You get heat. Of course, first, before you get heat, what do you get that he doesn't mention here? Anyone who's made a fire like that? Smoke. You get smoke. And I think a lot of us notice that in the beginning stages of chanting, a lot of what we have to deal with is the surfacing of our anartas and the facing of our anartas. But then you get this heat. So this heat is the Madhyama Vak becoming engaged. As soon as you're chanting on the level of Madhyama Vak, you will feel some heat. You start feeling some real effect from the chanting. The Vaikari Vak, very little effect. But as soon as the Madhyama Vak is involved, as soon as you're chanting on the level of speech and mind, there's some heat. You'll start developing some of the qualities of Sattva-gun, for example. You'll find you're more peaceful, you're more forgiving, you're more equipoised, you're more detached. A lot of material desires just kind of, you just see them for what they are and they just fall away. And you start to feel some real pleasure in chanting. And then the next thing Krishna says, you feel some heat and then you get a spark. So the spark is the Pasyantipak. Now, sometimes when devotees are chanting really nicely on the Madhyama Vak platform and these sparks come, they just kind of watch them. Wow, there's a spark. Oops, went out. When am I going to get that again? 5 months ago when I was chanting, there was a spark. Let's see, where was I? Oh yeah, I was at that festival. If I go back there again. Kind of like the hawk that finds a mouse under a particular bush and it keeps checking that same bush every day, you know? Okay, he's going to find another mouse. So we might think, well, if I go back to that place or if I sit next to that sannyasi again, you know, if I eat that particular prasadam, if I read that verse, the spark will come back. And Narada Muni tried that. It didn't work. What does Krishna say to do when that spark comes? If you're chanting on the level of Madhyama Vak and the heat's there, then there's going to be some sparks sometimes. And what does Krishna here say to Uddhava to do when the spark comes? Pour ghee. So when you see when that spark comes, when that desire, if it's a general desire or a specific, if it's a specific desire, you are most blessed. If it's a general desire, a specific desire for Krishna's service, when that spark comes, don't just look at it and say, oh, that's really amazing. Wow, this chanting is so cool. No, it couldn't happen to me. I'm not advanced enough. Pour ghee on it. Nourish it. You want to nourish it. You want to feed it. It's something that's very precious. You could also take it that these sparks are really a way of Krishna testing you and inviting you. Do you want me? Do you want me? Here's a little desire. Do you like it? Do you want more of it? So how do you nourish it? You nourish it by meditating on it, by focused hearing and chanting, by focused association. Anything you can do to nourish that spark. And please don't run away from it, but dive into it and nourish it. And when you nourish it with ghee, then it becomes a fire. And that's what we want. We want the fire, and the fire is that of Pasyantivak, which then awakens the Paravak. Now, of course, in the beginning, if you're trying to start a fire by friction, it is hard work. And Prabhupada says, like until Nista, he says, it's a hard struggle with determination. So, but once Nista comes, everything comes very easily. Basically, you want to get through that stage as quickly as possible. You want to get through the just chanting on Vaikarivak as quickly as possible. You get in the car, you start the car, and then you start going somewhere. Otherwise, you end up with these problems that Jiva Goswami talked about. And staying on that level where there's not even any heat, where there's just smoke and hard work, is not a fun place to be. I really don't suggest it. And someone can stay in that state where there's just smoke and sweat and hard work as long as you want. There's no like particular automatic time. It's not like a school where, you know, you finish this course and then you go on and you finish this. It's not like that. So it's a question of us. So you can stay at that platform just for a moment, and you can stay at that platform for lifetimes if you want. It's not some automatic thing. Does that make sense? Okay, so we're going to do just a little demo, and then we'll have time for a few questions. And if you're really interested in this topic, again, I would suggest that you do a search for Liberation by Sound by Bhakti Vigyan Swami and listen to the whole seminar, which is about 20 hours long. And he goes into this topic much more deeply, and then he gives a whole framework to it far, far beyond anything I can do in about an hour. So we're going to do a little experiment here. And well, the way we're going to do this, which I found to be most efficacious, is we're going to first try to work with Pasyantivak, then we're going to add Majjhimavak, then we're going to add the Vaikarivak. So I found this to be the best way to give a little demonstration of what we're talking about. So I'd like everyone, first of all, not to remember, but to actually go to a time, relive, re-experience a time when you had some desire to serve Krishna, when you really thought, I really want to serve Krishna. I really, really want to. I wish I could love Krishna. I wish I could serve Krishna. And bring back those feelings so that you feel them again now, and you're reliving that now, and you're there again now. Sometime when there was some real desire, I want to serve Krishna. I want to be with Krishna. I want to love Krishna. And go back to that time so that you're living it again now and hold that feeling. And if you never had that experience, then go to a time when you felt very detached. Not remembering, but feeling it again, where you just felt disgusted. I don't want material life anymore. It's boring. It's foolish. It's useless. I'm finished with material life. And again, find that feeling so you feel it deep and hold it. And if you never felt that, then go to a time when you were curious and you were wondering, is there a God? What's life all about? And get that feeling of intense curiosity. So now holding that feeling of either, I really, really want to find Krishna, I really want to love Krishna, I really want to serve Krishna, or that feeling of just being disgusted and detached with material life, or the feeling of curiosity. So we're now going to add the Majjhimavak. We're going to chant in our mind without making any audible sound. We're going to chant together in our mind, holding that feeling, three times the Hare Krishna mantra. It can help if you scream it in your mind. We're not going to make any sound that anyone can hear. It could also help if you visualize perhaps the deities, or you can visualize the words of the mantra so that your mind is totally fixed on the sound. So starting now, we're going to chant the whole mantra just in our mind, holding that feeling 3 times. Now holding the feeling and continuing to chant in the mind, we're going to add the voice. So holding that feeling of I really want to serve Krishna, or detachment, or curiosity, and chanting loudly in the mind, we're going to add the voice and chant the mantra 3 times together. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. So we have just a little bit of time for questions, if there's anything. Did we answer your question? Yes.
It's like we sometimes, we generally, we try to chant attentively, but it seems as though it's almost not under our control. But sometimes by Krishna's mercy, we're able to hear, but then sometimes, for most of the times, we're not able to. So then how do we... Because you said that.
Okay, so we gave a number of examples. I mean, Arjuna said, Chanchalahima na Krishna. The mind is very difficult to control. So we gave a number of examples of Srila Prabhupada's different instructions in that matter. As I say, I collect them. So Prabhupada would say, you see the deity. When you see the deity, meditate on the deity, the Lord's feet, or if not the deity, maybe you have a painting of Krishna that you really like. The deity form on the altar, the deity form in a painting, and meditate on that form so that you can bring that form to your mind without effort at any time. This is an instruction that Srila Prabhupada repeats many, 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 many times, that one of the purposes of deity worship is so that at any time during the day, you can bring the form of the deity to your mind. And then when you're chanting, meditate on the deity going from the feet to the face. Another instruction that he gives is that you can imagine that there's a diamond throne in your heart. He uses the word imagine. And that you put Krishna there, and put Krishna there in the form of the deity. So you have a diamond throne in your heart, and the deity, you can have the deity here, or if you like the deities in Vrindavan or in Mayapur or in France or wherever you want. It should be some, don't do it like, oh, I should be this, whatever you're going to feel attracted to. And your deity's in your heart, and you're bringing water from the Ganges and the Jamuna. This is nicely explained in the Nectar Devotion. Everyone's read that about the Brahmana who did that every day for many, 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 many years. And then you can imagine, you don't even just imagine that you're buying Ganga Jal from the shop, you can even imagine that you're going to the Ganges, and you're getting the Ganges water, and they're getting the Jamuna water, and you're bathing Krishna with these waters in gold and silver pots, and you're massaging him with oil, and you're dressing him, and you're ornamenting him, and you're giving him very nice foods. And Prabhupada said this in a lecture in Geneva. He said, chanting Hare Krishna means that you imagine you have a diamond throne in your heart. And he said, and if you chant Hare Krishna and think about Krishna this way, wherever you go will become a holy place. And then there's another place where Srila Prabhupada says, you know, if you're just chanting mechanically and thinking of mundane things, it's all useless or it will take a long time. And then he says, what is the use of your reading Krishna book? When you're chanting, you meditate on how Krishna's killing the demons and all the cowherd boys are clapping. Many, many times Srila Prabhupada talks about meditating on Krishna speaking the Bhagavad Gita in relationship to chanting. That's a frequent thing that he'll say. That he'll say, you feel the presence of, when you're chanting, you should feel the presence of Krishna, and you can remember him, these talks with Arjuna. And then he'll say, if you cannot do that, then simply try to hear the sound vibration. And simply try to hear yourself chant distinctly, or try to hear yourself chant sincerely. So if you say, well, I just can't do that. Okay, well then just hear the sound of Krishna's name and hear yourself chant distinctly. There's also some advice Bhaktivinoda Thakur gives, which I'm sure this is all old information for you. Things like try to chant in a conducive place. You know, don't try to chant on the train for your 16 rounds. Chant at a conducive time with good company, with a tulsi tree. During the rest of the day, don't fill your mind up with garbage. So, I mean, these are... I usually discuss that more in a different seminar in chanting, but those are just common sense things. So if all day long all you're reading about is who's winning the cricket game and what, you know, Hollywood star just got divorced for the 10th time and something, if, you know, if that's what's going through your mind, or even, you know, would you know so-and-so at the office just got a divorce? I mean, if that's what's going through your mind, then when you sit to chant, that's what's going to be going through your mind. So you want to be hearing. You know, you want to be reading the books, you want to be hearing the books, you want to be talking about Krishna with the devotees. So then naturally, Prabhupada would say, as soon as you chant Hare Krishna, immediately you remember Krishna's form and Krishna's pastimes and Krishna's attributes, and those things fill the mind. But this is a deliberate attempt. Prabhupada will use the word practice. That's why we call it sadhana bhakti. Sadhana means practice. It's why Krishna calls it abhyas yoga, repetitive practice, that it's a deliberate, focused attempt to man mana bhava mad bhakto and maya shakta mana partha. It's a very deliberate, focused attempt. It's not that, well, I'm just going to sit here and I'm just going to chant mechanically and my mind's going to wander and, oh, well, I'm a helpless victim and I'm dependent on Krishna's mercy. So he might every once in a while give you some mercy to say, come on. You know, if you're just sitting in your room all day, your mother might come in every once in a while and say, can you please get up? So, you know, every once in a while, because you are chanting and you're calling to Krishna, so if you're not making any effort to engage the mind, then Krishna may occasionally stop by and say, ahem! But you have to get up, you know. It's a limit. Yes, Prabhu?
I'm just wondering, I had one time, the Prabhupada, when they were building the temples in the early days, they were chanting, they said, Prabhupada, it's so busy, we can't think of Krishna while we're chanting. When we're thinking about the stuff we have to do through the day, do you have any suggestions on that? Is that okay
or can it be? I would really suggest that you don't do that. And my own analogy for that, I remember one time when my husband said to me, you know, the only time we're spending any time together is at the morning program. Otherwise, we're just always busy all day. And we decided that we were going to spend an hour together in the evening after he finished work. And it was such a difference just to have time just to be together. There was one American president we had, in America we've had more than once where a father and then a son became president. One was with John Adams and John Quincy Adams. And the son was one of 14 children. And he said that Thursday at 6 o'clock was always his favorite time, Thursday from 6 to 7, because what his mother did with each of the 14 children was each of them had an hour a week where she was just with that child. And that was his hour. Thursday from 6 to 7 was his time his mother was just with him. So there's a difference between working for somebody, even if you're thinking about them, and just being with them. There's some difference. If I'm doing things for you all the time, and I'm working for you, and even I'm absorbed in thinking about you while I'm working for you, still, if you love me, if you're my friend, or you're my wife or husband, or you're my child, or you're my parent, or whatever, you might want to just be with me just to be with me, yes? So especially our time with chanting, and especially our japa, which is very, very personal. In kirtan, we're with Krishna and all the devotees. With japa, it's just us and Krishna. And that's our time to be with Krishna. You know, so if you're hanging out with your friend and all your friend's thinking about is what they're going to do for you later, might that be a little disturbing? You might want them to really be with you now and just be attentive to you. So japa is very much like, especially japa. Kirtan also, but kirtan, it's a little different because we're with all the devotees. So we're more being with Krishna with all the devotees. It's like all the cowherd boys are dancing with Krishna, or all the gopis are dancing with Krishna, or the elderly cowherd men and women, they're all together watching Krishna being dragged through the clay and cow dung by the calves, and they're all together with Krishna. So kirtan is much more like that. But japa, it's just us and Krishna. That's more like just Mother Yasoda feeding Krishna, or, you know, some cowherd boy sticking a flower in Krishna's mouth, or some gopi just sitting with Krishna on her shawl on the bank of the Jamuna. And that's not the time you want to be with Krishna and say, oh, Krishna, you know, I have these books I have to take care of, and it's this thing with this publishing, and, you know, we have that bill with the temple, and he's like, can you just be with me? Can you worry about that later? This is our time, just be together. The same with deity worship, you know, when you're doing deity worship. And I see this is why we have our concentrated time. You know, we have some concentrated time every day that I'm just going to be with Krishna. I put aside everything else. And that should be, you know, in the class also. Sometimes devotees have a habit in the class of doing, you know, making ghee wicks, making garlands, I don't know what they're ever doing. But it's our time to just be with Krishna. So our japa, our kirtan, our shastra class. Now that doesn't mean, you know, you can listen to a class also while you're cleaning the floor. And you can chant Hare Krishna while you're doing everything, yes? You can chant Hare Krishna 24 hours a day. But we still have a time that I'm just going to be with Krishna. That's Urmila's realization on the topic. So you can, you feel free to reject it if you like. Yes, Prabhu?
How do I know when it's time to stop chanting aloud to my mind, chanting in my mind?
That doesn't mean chanting silently. Chanting in the mind means you're chanting both with the voice and the mind. How do you know when it's time? Today would be a really good time.
So you still chant aloud.
You're still chanting aloud, yeah. You're adding the mind. So you're chanting with the voice, you're adding the mind, then you're adding the desire, then you're adding the soul. Thank you for making sure that was clear. I appreciate that. Yes. Yes.
Could you tell us something about that Jagrat, the Shukti, Swapna, Surya, and the level of consciousness?
The ultimate level of consciousness is beyond dreaming, wakefulness, and deep sleep to the what's called the Turiya, or the fourth level of consciousness, which is very different from the others. The others are still within the body and the mind, and the fourth level of consciousness, you're touching the spiritual aspect. Yes.
There's a mention of karan shari, causal body.
The causal body.
Can you say something about it?
Not so much, because some of this I just got from Bhakti Vigyan Swami, and it's out of my depth.
So, as I said, this is his seminar, not mine. So I've included that for completeness, but I would rather refer you back to him for the complete seminar for some of those technical things. He's a great scientist. I am just a little fly on the ocean. No, he really is a great scientist. I mean, seriously. Yes?
So that stage when you're adding a ghee is like, because if we would make a fire, we would try to add the ghee in the same time when the spark comes.
Yes.
But when we chant, how do we add the ghee? Because you said, we can, like, another day, you can try.
That's in general, you're going to be doing that. Because when you do that, at the rest of the time, you're much more likely, when you're chanting, for the spark to blaze very quickly. But during the time of chanting, how do I describe this? The way that you would add ghee when you're chanting is to really go deep into it. Don't be an observer. We're an observer of the material world. We're not really a doer in the material world. Ahankaravi mudhat makarta hamiti manyate. We're not really the doer here. We're just the observer. When those sparks come, stop being the observer. Because you're starting to awaken something spiritual. Become the experiencer. I don't know how to explain it any better than that.
But your experience is like these sparks, they become more often once you advance.
Definitely. And they become more often and they're brighter and they stay longer and eventually they're blazing fire. And eventually it's constant blazing fire. So that's done both at the time of chanting and also in one's general life, in a very purposeful attempt in one's general life. There's a difference in one's practice of bhakti. So before those sparks arise, one may be hearing and chanting and following the process much more on the level of intellectual conviction bolstered by some spiritual experiences which are mostly of the nature of just heat. And, you know, occasionally maybe something more than that that's really just the shadow probably of someone else's experience, frankly. Like a shadow bhava, that if you're in the company of a very advanced soul, you may experience a shadow of what they're experiencing. And as soon as you're out of their association, it goes away. You know, so there may be some times like that where one has a little experience that's like way beyond yourself because you just happen to be around somebody who's very advanced. And then you may even have some symptoms, which Rupa Goswami describes as burnt symptoms. You may have some symptoms without the emotional ecstasy. Okay? It's as best as I can do in the time that we have, and this is all very deep, and we could speak for an hour on each of these things, and this is the whole science side. I can't get that much. But once these sparks come, your hearing and chanting and your meditation and your association should change. They don't have to. There's still free will. But if you say, all right, I'm going to pour ghee on these sparks, then you're going to start hearing and chanting and serving and associating for that purpose of nurturing that little desire that sparked up. Instead of just observing it and saying, oh, that's interesting, oh, that was Krishna's mercy. I guess, you know, what does Bhaktivinoda Thakur say? Say you shouldn't just sit around saying, well, maybe I'll get it by luck and maybe I won't get it by luck. So you can do that even with these sparks that come. You may think, oh, that's just some luck and maybe it'll come again. That'll be nice. But if you start then in the process of sadhana, you're starting to nurture that. You're starting to nurture that feeling. You're looking for the prayers and the songs which echo that same spark of feeling that you have. You're looking for the devotees that'll help you with that spark of feeling. You start becoming disinterested in people who are going to take you away from that. You start becoming disinterested in anything that's going to take you away from that. Yeah. And your motive and your focus for your practice, if you choose to pour ghee on the spark, it's not an automatic thing, becomes different. So that becomes in general in your life. And that may not be 24/7. Maybe it's like that for an hour a day. And then maybe after a few months, it becomes 2 hours a day. You understand? And during the time of chanting, you when that happens, immediately you become the experiencer. You can see those sparks as kind of like an open door. Walk through it. Don't just see, oh, the door's open. Oh, look at what I can see through the door. That's interesting. Oop, closed. Does that make sense? I don't know how to explain it any more than that. We're talking about something on the level of desire that, you know, we start having some problems with language. Yes?
I think I want more on the Vaikari Bhava platform. The mind is constantly thinking.
The mind is just somewhere else.
The beginning of the chanting always does something.
When we first start chanting Hare Krishna, generally we will chant in that way. Generally. Generally it will be like that. You know, so some people it's not. I mean, some people the first time they chant, they actually chant at a very deep level. Sometimes that happens.
Is it like, in order to chant in a very high form, does it involve our previous word karma as well?
Well, if you have some really good, if you've already gotten to a high platform of bhakti in a previous life, then you might immediately start your chanting on a very high platform, yes. But it doesn't matter. You can get to a very high platform very quickly in this life. That's not just some kind of lottery, you know. Well, I missed out on the past birth lottery, so. It's not like that. I mean, we can make whatever excuses we want. Okay, we have free will, and we can say, well, of course, they're advanced. They were advanced in another birth. What can I do? I just got to sit here and wait for Krishna to just, come on, Krishna. Guess you don't like me today. Okay, we'll try again tomorrow. I'll show up again. You know, so we, you know, whatever it is.
So, no, I'm asking you, like, in order to start on the mind becomes controlled.
Yeah, the mind, yeah.
Yeah, when the mind becomes controlled, it becomes into the Brahman.
Yes. But that should be a deliberate practice. It's a deliberate practice. As Krishna is saying, you're rubbing to make a fire. You're working. You're doing some deliberate practice. And in the beginning, it will be difficult. Generally. Does it have to be? No, it doesn't have to be. But it probably will be. You know, figure that it will be. It doesn't have to be. We could gain enough faith and conviction and surrender in 5 minutes. We could. That's possible. It's actually already there in the heart. It doesn't need to be a hard struggle with determination and years to get through the anartas. And it doesn't have to be like that. And I have met devotees in the Hare Krishna movement that came to very, very high levels of bhakti very, very quickly. And I've also met people who hung around for decades and didn't get anywhere. You know, I've met people on both ends of the spectrum. I mean, I remember once I was in Vrindavan, and I went to go, I didn't want to go see this person, but, you know, a good friend of mine said, can you please get this CD, and this is the only person who can get it, and go see them, and I was like, okay. So I went to go see this person, and their room looked like it hadn't seen the sun for 1,000 yugas, you know, all the curtains were drawn, everything was moldy, and it was awful. And I'm like, Prabhu, I came to get a CD for my friend. You know, can I just get the CD and get out of here, please? You know, and then this devotee starts talking to me. He says, there's no bliss anymore. I'm like, oh, God, can you just get me the CD, please? Like, where's the bliss? I remember when I used to come here, there was so much bliss, and there's none anymore. And he starts going on and on and on. Yes, Prabhu. Can you get me the CD? You know? And finally I said, you know, Prabhu, there's a lot of bliss here in Vrindavan if you came out of your room. So, it depends. It doesn't have to be like that for 30 years or 40 years or so many lifetimes. That's not required. It's not like, okay, anartha nivritti is going to take a long time and it's going to take me 10 or 20 years no matter what I do. I've just got to sludge through it. That's not necessarily true. You could go through an Artha Nivritti in a day or a week, you know. It's all right? Or you could take a few lifetimes. I mean, it's really up to us. You could say, well, really, isn't it about mercy? But the mercy's already there. You already got it. Everybody sitting in this room, you already have the mercy. Yes? It's Prabhupada right there, Krishna right there, and Gornitai's right there. You don't have to do something more. The mercy's already there. You can take one more, and then we're definitely going to stop. Yes?
Do you think in meditation and physical yoga there's some
struggle? You want to be careful you don't do yoga nidra bhakti. So if you think that concentration in bhakti and advancement on bhakti is dependent on anything other than bhakti, you run the risk of not doing pure bhakti. So if you think, in order for bhakti to work, I have to really be a good, pious person in the world, and I have to have my varnashram all together, that's karma mishra bhakti. If you think, in order for bhakti to work, I have to become detached and disgusted with the material world, that's gyan mishra bhakti. If you think, in order for bhakti to work, I have to master the asanas and the pranayam, then that's yoga mishra bhakti. Now, a lot of things are helpful, but we just shouldn't think that we're dependent on them. Okay? This room is helpful. It's helpful to have this room and not meet out on the street. If we had this meeting on the street, it would be very distracting. But the room is not necessary. We could have this meeting on the street. It's not necessary, but it is helpful. So if something helps you, do it. But just don't think, as soon as you think it's necessary, because it's anyabhilasitasanyam jnana karma anavritam. You can have jnana and karma and jnana karma adi. You can have jnana, you can have karma, jnana, and yoga, but don't let them cover the bhakti. The prime way they cover the bhakti is when people think, I have to do it first. First, I have to get my varnashram together, and then I can think about Krishna. I'm just going to chant on the Vaikari Bhak platform for now. I'm just going to chant with the voice. I'm not going to try to engage my mind and my desire. And after I get my material life together, you know, first I'm going to be a good wife, or first I'm going to be a good Brahmin, or first I'm going to be a good, you know, your Varna, your Ashrama. And then I'll be able to think of Krishna. That's Karma Mishra Bhakti. And if you think, first I have to have no material desires. First I have to become completely detached. I have to study the scriptures. Or as Adi Purusha Prabhu said, first I thought I had to have all the good qualities. I thought I had to be forgiving and equipoised and nonviolent and fearless. And then I can think of Krishna. And don't think about Krishna yet. I'm not pure enough. First, I have to become pure. Think about Krishna. No. That's for the advanced devotees. So first, I've got to become completely detached and have no material desires. Then I'll think about Krishna. That's Gyan Mishra Bhakti. And if you think, first, I have to completely control my senses, completely control my body, my breathing, and my senses, and attain subtle powers and the ability to fix my mind on one point without deviation through the power of will, and through the power of mechanically manipulating the life airs in the body. And once I've learned how to do that mechanically, then I will think of Krishna. That's yoga mishra bhakti. And Krishna says, klesho dika tarastheksham avyakta shakti tejasam avyakta higatir dukam dehavadbir avapyate. Because Arjuna's question at the beginning of chapter 12 was, Krishna, should I just start with bhakti? Or should I first realize atma? Should I first realize Brahman? And then do bhakti. And Krishna says, just do bhakti from the beginning. He said, just be absorbed in me with love. If you can't do that, do abhyas yoga, do practice yoga, and practice thinking of me. If you can't even do that, then do Krishna karmani, then just work for me. That's like the Vaikari Bhak platform. That's not even sadhana bhakti. That's just Krishna karmani. Sadhana bhakti begins when you start thinking about Krishna. Nectar Devotion, Chapter 2. So that's the beginning of sadhana bhakti, Vaidhi sadhana bhakti. So we're not opposed to karma, jnana, and yoga. We do activities, yes? We're not opposed to varnashram. We don't reject varnashram. We don't say nobody should do pious work and nobody should have pious stages of life. You know, we don't say everybody should just be an avaduta living naked in the forest. That would be rejecting varnashram, you know, or everybody should just become a Babaji or Mataji in Vrindavan. That's not what we're saying. That would be rejecting karma. And we don't reject gyan. There's whole sections of the Bhagavad Gita and Bhagavatam that are full of gyan. And we use gyan in our preaching. We'll say, you know, you might die any moment. This material world is temporary. It's full of misery. Do you really get all your desires fulfilled here anyway? The body's just a bag of flesh decorated with some hair, with some mucus in it. That's gyan. We use gyan. And we even use yoga. We say you should sit properly, right? We have yam and niyam. You should meditate on Krishna. We use those things, but we're not dependent on them. And you can achieve bhakti, frankly, without any of them. The prostitute that became Haridas Thakur's disciple, she wasn't in Varnashram, she wasn't doing any kind of karma. Magrari the hunter, he wasn't in Varnashram, he wasn't doing any kind of karma. I mean, you can give examples, people, they weren't doing any karma, they weren't doing any gyan, they weren't doing any yoga. What to speak of, you know, Ramchandra's devotees, Jatayu, I mean, he wasn't doing any karma or gyan or yoga. So you can just bhakti is fine. But if those help, fine. Is that clear? That's very important. That's like super, super, super important. Something that will really slow you down is if you're mixing your bhakti. And if you mix your bhakti, you'll have a long, dry period before you get really any taste from bhakti. Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada, ki jai. Srimad Bhagavatam, ki jai. Gaur Premanande.